It's back again. We thought it was dead, but it's back. It always comes back.
I hope you're all feeling Halloween-y. Hope you're feeling part of the spirit. I don't know. I know that Halloween's not everybody's favorite, but I also know some people don't like water. Hey, Pete, what's the stupidest thing you could think of to say? What's the dumbest thing you could think of to say right now? I was just watching this performance. Unimportant, something I had to do for work, but I was in the library at the school, and I saw the book Sign Language by Jerry Seinfeld. And I'd seen the performance before, so, you know, I didn't, like, need to pay attention necessarily to the entire thing. So I start reading it. And I'd probably read this when I was 14 or something, but it was pretty good. Like, the first chapter was basically, or the introduction was about his dad and how his dad, when he knew him, you know, was Seinfeld Sign Language or Seinfeld Sign Company, and he spelled Seinfeld like a sign. He was like, I'm not even kidding. But he said that his dad was like kind of a salesman for this sign company. And he would oftentimes not do what's best for the sale in favor of doing what he thought was most likely to get a laugh from somebody. And he would be like, oh, I got to see this guy's face break. I got to make him laugh. And so that's kind of what his dad would do. And Seinfeld was like, I think that probably has something to do with why my dad never really held down like a career for very long, or like a job for very long, because it's whatever, but there's just, that was who he was, and that's what he wanted to do. And also, he said that like he'd always been writing things in a journal, just funny little stuff that he never really thought would go anywhere, but he's kind of like, there's just, you know, that part of the brain that just wants to play all the time. And I was like, Jerry, I know what you're talking about. Holy fuck. Pete's brain identifies with that big time, where it's like something horrible's happening and you're still thinking of a joke, or you're a cutting thing to say about it or something. And yeah, I was like, I identify with this big time. I feel like in the last week or so, I've heard 15 different things about, like, isn't it hell to work in an office and do a job for someone that, and you're like, I don't know if this job really has any meaning. And I'm like, yes, yes, it is. Like, isn't that the worst thing you can imagine? And I'm like, yes, it is. And I've been watching these movies about strongmen or whatever on Netflix, because there's various, I recommend Strongland episodes 1 and 3. Episode 2 is about Scotland and is boring. Should have been half as long. But you know, there's an episode on Iceland, and it's basically about, in Iceland, there are these historic, well-known large stones that people lift up. And it's like, you could prove your strength by lifting these, and something like, I guess, a lot of Icelandic, you know, young men do. And I guess the tradition comes from they would, you would be going on a fishing vessel. And the way they would decide how much of a share of the profits you got was they would take you to these stones and be like, okay, can you lift this one? Then you're good enough to go on the boat. And then if you can lift this one, that's a half share. And if you can lift this big one, that's a full share. So it's just interesting to me. I find it interesting. But at the same time, it's like Poonmaster Flex wanted to watch some show about space and how basically everything in the universe works. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not really interested in that. But if we could watch the show about these big guys who lift these big fucking rocks, that is fascinating to me. But and then, you know, there's another movie about strong men and like how much they have to eat and train and the injuries and all this shit. And then we watched Free Solo as well, about the guy free climbing El Capitan. So he's no ropes, no whatever. And it's like, it seems very crazy. But I also, I know the question he gets all the time, and the question these strong men get all the time is basically like, why? Like, who gives a fuck? But part of me is, I think part of me understands that more than I understand, like, what I'm doing with my life, which is sort of, well, what's worse? Like, I gotta go and sit under this, in this office, under these fluorescent lights with carpet that smells like weird chemical pee, and make adjustments to PDFs and stuff, and, like, for what? Or lift a really heavy stone. And it's like, I mean, okay, I'm not saying everybody's job is totally pointless, but I'm also say I think what I'm saying is that job way more meaningful than lifting a big heavy stone that I wasn't sure I could lift? I'm not so sure. I'm not totally sure that I could say that what I'm doing is like really super important and what they're doing is stupid. I guess I'm kind of in a no judgment zone as far as, well, they seem to be having more fun than I am. And I don't know that what I'm doing, sure, if I was working on the Manhattan Project and I'm like, these strong men seem to be having more fun than me, I'd be like, it kind of makes sense. I mean, I'm going to change the face of human existence, but maybe not for the better. I don't know. That, I guess that remains to be seen to this day. But if I was doing that, I'd be like, okay, well, what I'm doing is so meaningful and important that I'm not having as much fun. But I'm kind of like, I don't know. I don't know that what I'm doing is so meaningful that I also shouldn't be having fun or whatever. Anyway, this is today's episode's about the spookiness of being unfulfilled in your job. Totally not what this is about. This is a book review of sorts. Now, the book I'm going to talk about today is called Toy Cemetery by William Johnstone, who you might know from, he's written like a bajillion paperback westerns, horror, thrillers, other shit. I think there was an era when you could be a William Johnstone. I think that era is over, but where you can basically, if you can put out a book 2 or 3 times a year, someone will publish it. And basically, even if they're not that great, if you can just crank them out, you could make a decent living. Now, I know that still exists. I know some of you are probably like James Patterson and Lee Child, and there are some other people who are definitely doing that. But I think that's a fairly rarefied thing today. I don't think that's like a common way that you could make a living. Also, I feel like the standards are higher. I could be biased. I could be wrong. But I feel like the standards for like what it takes to if you were going to do that as your career, I feel like you've got to be a little bit more interesting or doing something more interesting. I mean, is 50 Shades of Grey a thing, and is that well written? Yes and no. Yes to one question, no to the other. But, you know, it was this person, obviously, E.L. James, found a niche, whether she did that on purpose or on accident, but she found a niche, she filled it, and that worked. But I feel like the William Johnstones of the world were just kind of like crank out a pulpy adventure every 6 months, and that's how I make my living. I have no idea, like, whether he feels that what he was doing was art. I'm guessing not. I'm going to just make a judgment call and say I don't think he thought that, but who the hell knows? So let's talk about Toy Cemetery a little bit. And the other thing I guess I have to say about Toy Cemetery is that I am going to talk about the plot. And usually if I was doing a book review with a book I would recommend someone read, I wouldn't go through the plot as much as I would in this book. But in order to talk about this book, I think you have to talk about the plot. Because the plot is nonsensical and bonkers and just a bunch of shit thrown together to make up a book. I mean, I felt a little bit like the first third of the book was fucking amazing. Like, it was amazing. It was shitty, but it was great. It was a great big pile of shit, but I was enjoying shoveling that shit, right? For whatever reason, as I was reading Toy Cemetery, I was like, this book is a great big pile of shit, but it's kind of working for me. It's like watching a real shitty action movie. And you're like, from the beginning, you're like, this is pretty shitty. But things are happening and it's keeping you interested. And you're like, this has just enough of what I need to recognize this as action movie. It's got just enough in here to keep me engaged, make me feel like it's worth my time to watch this, all these things, right? So that's kind of how I felt about Toy Cemetery for the first third. But then the two-thirds that followed, I really felt like, okay, he wrote the first third. That was like the manuscript he turned in to the publisher as like, here's basically where I'm going with this. And they were like, this is fucking amazing. Yes, we'll pay you $10,000 for this manuscript or whatever. I have no idea. I frankly have no idea what someone gets paid for a manuscript now or then. But I suspect it's an amount that would sound like an incredible amount of money. And at the same time, when you go into like, okay, well, I'd have to do this two or three times a year to make a good salary. And no one's going to do this two or three times a year as far as no one's going to publish a book of mine two or three. Anyway, point being, he got that amount of money, turned that money into cocaine, used all the cocaine, and then sort of in atypical fashion for him was like, oh, fuck, I thought I had done that, man. What is this one about? The haunted dolls and shit? Okay, let's crank out two thirds of a novel this weekend. I'm going to be sobering up and finishing this novel, so it's going to be, and you know, I'll be doing a lot of push-ups, so when I do the push-ups, it kind of reactivates some of the drugs that are stored in my body fat, and I'll go in and out of this fugue, and we'll have, at the end of the day, we'll have a reasonable thickness novel, and as far as what happens in it, who the fuck knows, who the fuck cares. After this, I gotta write something about a cowboy that gets abducted by aliens or some... who fucking knows? So, that's my personal theory on Toy Cemetery. And so, to talk about Toy Cemetery and really explain... I don't think I can really talk about it without really talking about it. And I don't think it would... I don't think I could do it justice in a review without saying the plot. So I guess, spoiler alert, question mark, because I will say this too, I wouldn't necessarily recommend anyone read this book. I think it's a lot more fun to hear about and talk about this book than it is to read it. You know how sometimes a shitty movie is like that? Or I would say a shitty experience. I have a friend who, upon reading a book review I wrote of, I don't know, A Tree Grows in Brooklyn or Scarlet Letter or something like that, his comment was, I hope you never read another book you like for the rest of your life, because your review was very entertaining. But I don't think that you're going to make that kind of a review on something that you loved. And I was like, that's probably true. I feel like it's so much easier to talk about things that you hated or that are terrible. And sometimes I'm like, well, it's just because we're all negative and whatever. But sometimes I think, well, I mean, you've got things to say about it. Like, and I think we understand why we didn't like something better than we usually understand why we do like something. I think it's easier if I hate some asshole that I know, it's easier for me to explain that than it's like, explain why you love somebody. And it's like, well, I don't know. You just fucking do. I mean, you talk about a couple of their qualities or whatever, and you're like, I don't really know. I don't know. Who the hell knows? So with that rambling intro, Toy Cemetery. So Toy Cemetery is, it's hard for me to explain this in linear fashion, but I'm going to do my very best. Toy Cemetery begins with a sequence of a fat man fixing or maybe making a doll. And you're not really sure what's happening, you know, but it just seems generally evil and bad. And a man named Jay and his daughter, who I think is named Kelly, here's a problem that the book has. Right off the bat, our main character is named Jay, and there's another guy who's named Jim. And I was like, you know, Jay, Jim, they both seem to be about the same age, white guys who grew up in the town, or I don't know, they didn't grow up in, whatever, it doesn't fucking matter. They're not distinct characters, and then their names are so close that it's kind of hard for me to remember who was who. And I don't think it's just that, it's not just that their names are close, it's that they're very generic, but also these two characters behave in similar ways. Jay is a Vietnam vet. I guess you're always a Vietnam vet, but he's a Vietnam vet who lives in New York, but came from the town of Victory, Missouri, which, having been in the area where I assume this kind of happened, I don't think there's a Victory, but there is a Liberty, Missouri, and there is a Freedom, Missouri. So Victory is, I gotta assume that this is kind of the area of Missouri that this person was thinking of, this Johnstone was imagining when he wrote Toy Cemetery. So if that helps you get in the mind of a madman who would write this book, there you go. Jay discovers, and he has a daughter who I think is named Kelly but might be named Jenny. And again, it's like Kelly and Jenny seemed fairly interchangeable, and more so as time went on. So remember, time went on, because that could be a pun if you are very generous to me, and also as we get further in. So Jay lives in New York City with his daughter. Let's just say it's Kelly. And he gets word from Victory, Missouri, that his aunt has died. And so he's supposed to go there to collect her shit that she left in her will. Now, this is sort of weird because Jay, as it was explained, I think lived with his aunt for a period, or maybe his entire childhood. I don't really remember. But this is like the most hateful woman on the planet. Like, everyone is like, she's kind of a bitch. And she just seems awful. They never really explain why. But basically, just think of her as like a witch who lives on the hill that is a real dick to everybody. And that probably satisfies. I don't think this is a case where it's like, oh, she was just a savvy businesswoman who her assertiveness was seen as bitchiness. I think she was probably like a monster, a literal monster. And believe me, this is not a book that deals in subtle social commentary in anything resembling that fashion. So just let's be clear about that right away. So Jay goes home, and he's a little confused as to why he's getting this estate. But apparently his aunt owned basically everything in town, including this old house. And, I don't know, like a publishing company and a toy-making company, which seems to be a building. And it's just, she owns a bunch of shit. So he's basically rich now, although that really doesn't play into the story at all. She also had bought a brand new Cadillac, which he goes and picks up and then drives around for a while, which is like, a big luxury car at the time. This whole thing of him, his aunt being wealthy and owning everything and whatever, doesn't really seem to matter at all. It just seems to be like how they get him to come back to Victory, Missouri, which is where he grew up. And apparently, things have gotten quite spoopy. I don't know if it was like this when he was there, but he left. And now, when he got back, things are weird. As they're driving in, there's a doll that tries to, like, escape into the road. And him and his daughter see it, and they're like, well, surely we didn't just see what we both just saw independently and whatever. And it's like a little man. And then the fat man comes and catches it and, like, smashes its head, and it's got, like, a brain inside. So, you know, and this is probably in the first 5 pages that this happens. So I'm thinking, fuck yeah, I'm in. Buckle up. So then they get to town, and it's, you know, they reconnect with some people. He reconnects with some people. They were going to stop there for, like, one night. But then, you know, has this just odd feeling of, like, we should stick around for a while. And his daughter, shockingly, is like, okay. And his daughter seems to oscillate between being, like, 17 and 10 as far as her behavior and whatever. Because I thought she was supposed to be in her teens, but then she's, like, riding her bikes around with a group of other kids that seems, like, childish. Maybe that's what you do in Victory, Missouri, into your late teens. But I would think someone would have a car, right? If you're like 16, 15, it's like somebody's going to have access to a car and is going to drive these kids around. Anyway, that's just a minor nitpick to illustrate the larger issue of, I don't know how old these kids are supposed to be, but that's ensconced in the large issue of the book, which is, I don't know if I care. It doesn't really matter. None of this matters. Just keep that in mind as I'm talking. None of what happens in this book matters. So a weird fog descends on Victory, Missouri every night. It's like a thick... I think it's a literal fog, but it may just be a metaphorical fog. That part is very difficult to determine. And again, who cares? If I had a bell, I would just ring it to symbolize the phrase, who cares? Doesn't matter. And when the fog descends, and this happens nightly, everyone starts acting very strangely. They become, like, weirdly aggressive, and they try to kill each other, or they get very sexual. They want to bang each other. And also, you know, like, they're walking by a house, and this young teen boy is just standing off. Well, he's standing and jerking off, so he's standing off on his porch. Jerking off at somebody. I guess I'd never really thought of it before, but I guess you can sort of, like, aggressively jerk off at someone from your front porch. And they're just walking by. It's kind of weird, because I'm like, well, I know, for example, if you're naked in your house and the window's open, that the law in most places is like, well, hey, that's his house. He can be naked in his fucking house. But I also know, because of somebody that I knew, that you can't jerk off in, like, your open window, because the cops will be called and you'll be a sex offender. I found this out from, not personal experience, but from, personal adjacent experience, maybe. So, you know, this weird thing happens every night. And one of the first nights Jay is there, Kelly, his daughter, comes into his room, and they almost have sex. And they're both sort of like, she's like in a fog, he's also in a weird fog. It's basically like they've both been drugged, and then someone's encouraging them to make a porno. But the person who's encouraging them to make the porno is like a unseen puppet master force. And the only thing that prevents them from having sex is they're both wearing cross necklaces, and the crosses clink together. And that snaps Jay out of it. Kelly is still, like, under the fog, but he snaps out of it and is like, what the fuck? And I think locks her in a room or something. And then she comes out the next morning, doesn't even really remember what happened, and seems normal. And a friend, a female friend Jay had reconnected with on their first 10 minutes in town, because that's, of course, what happens, says that, comes over and is like, I had sex with my daughter last night. And he's like, I almost did too. That's fucking weird. And so they all decide to stay in the house together, which I thought was strange because I was like, doesn't this just, I mean, if you almost had sex with your daughter and that's not what you really wanted to do, is this a good idea? Like, add more people to the equation? I don't know. Seems like a win for Jay, I guess, because he's like, well, maybe if I go under the fog and just want to have sex with somebody, there's a 1 in 3 chance that it'll be my daughter this time as opposed to a 1 in 1. So that's kind of a win. But I guess for the lady, it's also a win because it's like, well, I can have sex with Jay. That kind of seemed like where their relationship was headed. So fine. The daughter of this lady, I don't know. I mean, again, it kind of depends because I couldn't tell if she was like 17 or like 12. So I was like, I'm not sure how skeeved out to be by that. Oh, I'm sorry, this is what I'm fucking talking about. Before Jay and his daughter have sex, Jay has sex with a girl who I'm pretty sure is supposed to be like 17, who's like working in the lawyer's office, who's handling all the death claims of wills and shit. And she just like comes to his house, they bang and in this sort of fugue, and then they're both kind of like, what the hell did we just do? Like, that was fucked up and weird. So that happens. So it kind of, I guess it eases you in a little. It doesn't just start off with incest right away, but it gets into it. And I guess that's another thing, is I'm sort of like, I'm not sure how skeeved out to be by an adult man having sex with a 17-year-old. He seems as much a victim of the fog as she does. And also, when later he almost has sex with his daughter, and this other lady does have sex with her daughter, and they just kind of are like, well, whatever. I mean, it's... the book treats it fairly nonchalantly, which is crazy. Because, like, it happens, and then they're like, well, whatever, that happened. I mean, at the bare minimum, I think it's like, we gotta get the fuck out of this crazy town. That seems like the bare minimum. Probably I would go ahead and be like, let's get out of this town and enroll ourselves in some therapy. Is that what you call it? Enrolling? Is it like a school? Who fucking I don't fucking care what it's called or how it works. Point being, it's handled fairly nonchalantly. And so, you know, the idea of being skeeved out by this adult man had sex with this 17-year-old woman and she wasn't in her right mind is amazingly not remotely the crazy part. And so really... it's all but forgotten by the time you get to... by the time he almost bangs his daughter, you're like, wait, what? Oh, who cares? I don't give a shit about that. Let's stay on topic here. Let's talk about the... when he had a sex with a girl almost of the same age. But how that doesn't even really matter, because this girl who was almost the same age was his daughter. And I would certainly... I feel pretty comfortable saying I'm more skeeved out by someone having sex with their daughter, regardless of age, than I am them having sex with someone who is slightly underage. I feel like that's a pretty solid judgment to make as far as judgments go. Seems to me like that's a reasonable one. Yeah, having sex with an underager is fucked up, but having sex with your daughter, even if she was like 30, seems weirder. I don't know. And like, let's be clear. I'm not saying, here's the one I'm picking because I'm in that scenario. I'm just, you know, just trying to evaluate the places this book decides to go pretty early on and decide, you know, how does Pete feel about that? What does Pete think of this whole rigmarole? Okay, maybe it's time to take a little break from plottings and do a little character roster here. Because the group is basically the characters. The characters just sort of function as one. It's like there's one head and a bunch of bodies. So there's Jay. That's our main guy. There's Jim. Jim is Jay, except Jim works for the state police, whatever that is. I don't know if that's like the state patrol or what, but he's state police. The police are powerless to help in this situation because reasons. They come up with a couple harebrained ideas as far as like, well, what if we did this or this? Because, you know, basically whatever happens, they're like, well, the police are never going to believe that there's a bunch of weird evil people who do this stuff, you know, who jerk off in front of each other and have sex with their own family members. Oh, I do have to mention one last thing about the incest, which is it comes up a lot throughout the book because apparently there's some kind of evil force. So we sort of eventually learn that there's an evil one, an evil creature, character, man. And he is, you know, forcing people to incest each other in order to create weird monster things. I'm not exactly sure how this works or how realistic this is, but that's basically what he seems to be doing in the why. So he's making like weird human monsters that are the product of incest, which are kind of like human things. They look like humans, but fucked up, I guess, and are very strong. They're mutants. Let's just call them mutants. This seems to be the way that these are created, and most of the residents of this town are apparently the product of incest. And I'm not exactly sure when it turns to a creature, when somebody turns to a creature because of incest. And also, I'm not really sure. This book reminded me a little bit of the motion picture Phantasm, which I'm sure that I talked about on a previous Potoween. But basically, from what I can tell, the plot of Phantasm is there's a funeral home where the tall man works. He's got a magic pinball that kills people in weird ways. And his plan seems to be to put people into barrels. The barrels are then shipped to another dimension or another planet, where they are rolled across the entire landscape of the planet by dwarves. And the dwarves, and then the people in the barrel also get turned into dwarves, who then seemingly push more barrels across this huge landscape of another world to make more dwarves. It's very confusing, and it's very unclear. Phantasm, I'm not a huge fan of this in a movie, but Phantasm really did need that moment of, Mr. Bond, well, here is where I explain my entire plan. Because some movies have that, and they don't fucking need it. Because it's basically like, well, you don't really need to tell me how you're going to rob the bank or why. I understand why you would rob a thing full of money. That's not a crazy plot that I need to have explained to me. I'm pretty confident that I understand the basics of what's going on here. As far as making people into dwarves who then push containers across another planet that are full of people who would then be turned into these dwarves who wear cloaks. They kind of look like Jawas. And I can't say I'm sure where that's going. I can't say that I fully understand it. Now, that's part of what makes Phantasm an excellent movie, is because they, I don't know if this made perfect sense to whoever made it, Don Coscarelli, but it definitely doesn't make sense, and it kind of seems like the attitude of the movie is like, hey man, if you don't get it, fuck off. I don't know what to tell you. Maybe you're just not smart enough for Phantasm. This has some of that going too, except I don't think, it's not as elaborate. It's just, I can't figure out why. Why is this evil one making mutants? Why is he having incest happen? Okay. So Jim is state police. We've got Eric and a priest. I can't remember the priest's name, but he's a blind priest who's, you know, wise and whatever. And then Eric is his sort of bodyguard slash seeing eye dog slash insane guy who apparently used to be a doctor, and multiple comments on how he's very rough looking dude and he can like fuck people up and knows how to use guns and shit. There's a bunch of kids. That doesn't really matter. There's Deva, that's the female love interest. There's also Piper, who is Jay's ex-wife slash Kelly's mom, who is a supermodel, who's like on tour supermodeling. And apparently her and Jay still have like an on and off again friends with benefits type of relationship, it would seem. She shows up at one point for no real reason. I mean, there doesn't seem to be any purpose to her showing up, but that's fine. Who else do we have? Oh, we have a doctor that shows up eventually who's also an expert archer. He gets a gun and he's like, I don't really know how to use this, but if only I had a bow and arrow, I could really do some damage. And you're like, well, I think we all know this motherfucker is going to end up getting a bow and arrow. But also, I question that. Because I'm like, well, I think a gun is pretty simple in terms of the basic operation, like how do you reload it and shit. So I do have to ask the question of, well, I mean, if you can shoot a bow and arrow, you can probably shoot a gun, right? If you have the basics of shooting a bow, it seems much harder to kill something with a bow and arrow than it does a gun. So I would think a lot of the same principles would apply. I don't know, but it kind of seems like if you're good at tennis, I bet you could. Yeah, I'm sure Serena Williams could make a decent showing on a racquetball court with a 5-minute lesson. She could probably fucking run circles around everybody. Because it's like, it seems like a lot of the same principles apply here. In basic terms, seems kind of the same. But what do I know? There's a bunch of bad guys. The bad guys are all generic. There's the guy who works... Okay, there's the guy who works in the doll factory, making the toys. The kids fuck with him at one point in a very minor way, and it seems like he gets a hold of one of the kids and then is gonna like kill and rape her, and somehow she escapes. But you're like, that seems like a high risk to low reward ratio here of like, hey, let's go make fun of that fat guy who works at the doll factory who we all think kills kids and whatever. He sort of is there, and you think he's going to play a larger role, and he really doesn't. So this book has some like Stephen King-y type elements, because it's got the old one, the evil one, the dark one, whatever he's called. He's a little bit like the dark man in The Stand, who is just sort of this like, you don't really understand exactly what his role and power and what he is and where he's from, but you're like, I kind of get it. I mean, Stephen King gives you enough to understand what's going on. This book is basically just refers to this guy slash thing, but doesn't explain anything. It's also got, like, kids, and kids being kids, and kids acting weird and confronting weird cosmic evil. But the kids are horribly rendered. And then it's also got that weird, like it's got a town that's under a spell. You know, it's under a weird evil, and who knows how to fix it or what's going on. And again, pales in comparison. Stephen King's handling of this subject matter was certainly... I mean, I could say it was better, but that doesn't really begin to describe what the difference is, does it? But it's gives you an appreciation for Mr. Stephen King. You're like, I gotta give this guy a hand. He knows what the fuck he's doing. Because this is what happens when you try to do Stephen King and you're not Stephen King. So, off and on, these nights happen where everyone gets all fucked up and then they're not. It doesn't seem to affect our heroes so much, though, at some point. And then one of the characters gets sort of kidnapped slash captured. So, and I think this is the same character who Jay had sex with at the beginning of the book, this, like, underage lady. I think she gets raped at the police station, and then she's, like, in a hospital where I think she also gets raped, possibly by the Dark One. I'm not real sure about that. It seems like this character basically is just like, someone's got to get raped in this book, right? And you're like, maybe. I don't know, maybe not. Did you think about trying it without that? And it's like, oh, fuck that. So this character is basically constantly getting raped. Can't stop, won't stop. And then, so she gets, like, taken by the police for some reason, and then taken to this hospital. And that's when they find out, like, oh, the hospitals, that's where something fucked up happens. So Jay kind of gets himself kidnapped and put in the hospital. That classic ruse. And then escapes, finds the girl, they escape together. They don't actually discover what's going on, although it seems like there's something going on with, like, this seems to be the epicenter of where the Dark One is doing his activity of turning people into dolls. Now, this is also a confusing thing, because there seem to be three types of dolls in the book. Number one, there seems to be human-sized, very human-appearing porcelain dolls. So they're like giant mannequins, but they seem to be made out of porcelain or plaster or something. And, you know, if you... let's say you hit one in the head with a baseball bat, smash its head in. It'll still have a... well, some of them seem... no. They all seem to be hollow inside. And so you'll smash its head, and then its arms are still attacking you, and its body is just attacking you. It's weird. Then the other two types of doll are miniature dolls, as we would think of them. But there seem to be good guy dolls and bad guy dolls. Now, all of the dolls seem to be people who were turned into dolls by some unknown process. It's not totally clear whether it's like the old evil one is doing this in the hospital or if it's the doll maker at the toy place that's doing it. I'm not real sure. Maybe I missed... I read this on Kindle and I was like, is there like an entire chapter that they just didn't get transferred over? It seems like there may be a chapter that didn't make it to the electronic format where everyone explains what the fuck is going on here. But, so there's the good and the evil dolls that are regular sort of dolls slash toys. And there seems to be no distinction of these other than A, the good guy dolls seem to get killed a lot and are, you know, dragging their entrails across the floor or something because they have no legs, or B, straight up just say like, hey, we're the good guy dolls, you know, we're gonna go fight these other guys, and you're like, okay. And so the sort of big confrontation comes when the humans, our heroes, decide to fight the other residents of the town, which at this point seem to be all dolls, human size and otherwise. And also there's a pack of good guy dolls who are like, hey, we're gonna go fight this evil. And this guy gives this little speech, this little doll man, and he's like, you guys stay out of it, we're gonna go fight the evil. And Jay hears this and is like, okay, and then completely ignores it and just takes everyone to go fight the evil. But I'm not really sure what their plan was. It seemed like their plan was just like drive around and smash up dolls. So that's kind of what they do. They fight the dolls, they smash the dolls, various characters die, so on and so forth. It turns out they kind of stumble into the toy factory or whatever. It turns out that what's going on there is they're filming child pornography in the back room, which, okay, let me just be clear. I don't think that's a hilarious subject, but what's hilarious about it is that this book was just like, you know what, let's throw child porn in there too. Because it's sort of like, I guess, you know, what's the worst thing that you can have an evil guy doing? And it's like filming child porn. But again, I'm sort of like, wait, he's like an ancient evil who is like creating products of incest and sort of like, okay, I'll say like, I get that. And that's in huge quotes. But then what's the child porn for? They're like filming it. It's on tape. It's not clear if they're distributing it, really. But I'm like, presumably, that's the only reason to do that. But then, for what? For money? Like, do they need money? It doesn't seem like they have any real use for money. So I'm not sure why child pornography is being made, or how that fits in with, like, turning people into dolls. Also, I guess I don't know, like, if you could make dolls, couldn't you just film pornography of adults in doll bodies? And that, I mean, that sounds like a niche. That sounds fucking weird. But anyway. Also, I'm not really sure. This warrants investigation, except I'm not interested and also feel like it goes down a path that I don't really care to go down. I wonder how people distributed, like, child pornography back in the day, like in the 70s. If someone had a bunch of VHS tapes, like, how did you even get those? How did you get them? How did you distribute them? How does that work? The internet, it makes sense to me. As far as, like, the nuts and bolts of it, I'm like, eh, I could see how you could do this and how you could get away with it, or at least get away with it for a while. But that is like, so you're just putting it in the mail? I mean, that seems fucked up. Aren't they like, how come this guy is always delivering these weird packages with rubber gloves on? Anyway, so they bust up the child pornography studio and burn the tapes that they have, which I guess is, you know, this is the moment in the book that's the George W. Bush mission accomplished banner, because I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, if they had this whole child pornography ring going, which is sort of fueled by a weird fog that comes over the town at night that makes kids open to having sex with each other, I don't think that busting up a back room where they're filming this is really gonna, I don't think that they're gonna be like, well, now we can't do it anymore. Seems like they're gonna, I don't even know why it was happening in this weird back room, because it seems like the entire town is like crazy and in on it and whatever. They have an orgy in a church at one point where they, you know, turn all the crosses upside down and then just have an orgy for no apparent reason. There are short chapters where they have these meetings of some kind of, it seems like a board of directors, but it's for the evil guy, the evil one, the bad guy. So it just seems like it's the evil one's, I don't know, foundation board meeting and talking about, like, how are we going to take care of this situation? There's also, I mean, there's just, this is the thing. I guess right now I feel like I'm rounding up subplots that didn't go anywhere. And that's most of what the book is. One of my favorite subplots that doesn't go anywhere is Jay apparently figures out something because people's watches, his watch stops or something, and he like goes out to dinner with his lady friend and they have like a weird lost time or something. And he figures out that there's some kind of evil thing happening with time. So he goes back to his aunt's house, shoots this clock, and then all the characters are propelled into the past. There's also a news crew. The news crew, like the guy who had a video camera, is now holding like a giant old-timey camera that you would use with like a flash bulb or whatever, and all crazy shit, right? So they're like propelled back in time for about 5 seconds, and then they're back to the present. They snap back to reality, and then that somehow does something. Somehow destroys the aunt, who's a ghost now, I guess, destroys her power or something. Not real clear on exactly what that did or why that happened. So anyway, and then another subplot is they seem to be shipping these dolls all over the United States. So the whole time they're like, oh my God. And like Jay's like, I'll go back to New York. And they're like, go ahead. Your entire building is full of these dolls. So they have this big fight. During the big fight, there are some good gory scenes. You know, there's like hands that are broken off of this doll and the hands rip this dude apart. A guy gets like basically his arm pulled off and out of a window of a car and stuff. You know, good shit like that. The good guy dolls are like flying planes and dropping like M-80s or something on the bad guy dolls. It's pretty unclear what's happening, but whatever. Then it kind of wraps up with almost everyone's dead. Jay survives, barely, and so does his daughter. And so his daughter is like with him in the hospital. But then Jay like gets out of the hospital. And, oh, it turns out also that basically everyone in Jay's life was, like, conspiring against him. So they all conspired to bring him back to Victory, Missouri, and to have sex and, like, have an incest baby, because that would be the next heir of all this craziness or something. So his wife, his daughter, everyone's in on it. Everyone else seems to know that this is going to happen except for him. But he escapes, but his daughter's still alive, and she's like, oh, I'll take care of him. And you're like, ton, ton, ton. Also, I was like, oh, the end of this book is going to be, they're going to be driving off, but there's going to be, like, you know, a teddy bear in the back seat, and its head turns all the way around or something. But no, they just kind of dropped that whole thing. And the end is like, if I remember correctly, Jay escapes from the hospital, tracks down some old man who we've never seen before, who apparently is the personification of this old evil, and like shoots him at the dump. And that guy falls over dead in the dump. The cops shoot Jay because they're like, what the fuck is going on? You can't just like shoot somebody. Reasonable. So he's like, he's probably going to survive. His daughter is like ominously saying, you know, ooh, I'll take good care of daddy or some shit. And the ancient evil is dead, but maybe not. And also, it's not real clear if he destroyed the devil or shot an old man in the dump. It's a fine line between destroying evil and killing an old man at the dump. That's basically Toy Cemetery. That's my Potoween expert review of Toy Cemetery. What would I say about it overall? I would say it's that challenge of a bad movie or something where it's kind of fun to talk about and it probably sounds fun. But when you're sitting there alone in your kitchen reading it, it's not that fun. You're thinking about it and you're like, this is crazy. But it's not fast-paced enough to keep going. And honestly, I had to keep going backwards to be like, wait, what? When did this happen? I don't understand. Also, my Kindle, something was going on with this book where it stopped showing the like estimated time to finish this book. So that was a real bummer, because when I'm not really enjoying a book, I look at that an awful lot, and boy, was I tapping that an awful lot on this, and it just kept saying, you know, it was like, oh yeah, you probably have about an hour left in this book, and then I would read for 20 minutes, and it would be like, 58 minutes left, and I was like, what's happening? So anyway, it's kind of a slog. I would recommend listening to this instead of reading it yourself. That's what I would recommend. Kind of how I feel about Modelland, or the works of Charles Hinton, the longer works. The shorter ones, read that shit. Age of Cold Beer, gold. But Eagle Bird 1, leave that to the professionals. So there you go. I hope that was spoopy enough for you. And we'll see you tomorrow.
My goddamn ones. Now you're still a product. He numbers Velocity. Devil.